In a world of endless notifications, there could be an important one you're missing. Your kidneys may be signaling an SOS. With high blood pressure or type 2 diabetes, your kidneys could be warning you of early signs of damage, which may put you at higher risk for events like heart attack or stroke. But there's a simple test that can help spot a hidden signal. Ask your doctor about a urine test called UACR to help detect kidney disease and heart risk early. To learn more, visit detectthesos.com today.
The Last Word
with Life Pharmacy. Over 100 local pharmacies nationwide that are always here to help. Life Pharmacy. Live better together.
Joining us for the week trending, we have freelance TV producer Paddy Duffy and Aoife Barry, broadcaster and author. And Aoife, your former colleagues in the Journal Investigates, have done a really interesting piece on the longevity of Penny's clothes, which is important, I suppose, for environmental reasons as much as anything else, isn't it?
Yeah, I think it's really important for environmental reasons. It's really important because companies are making a lot of claims, retail companies are making a lot of claims about their clothing and about, you know, how long they last, about what they're made of. And often as consumers, we don't really know maybe what the words mean, or we don't know what it means in practicality. And I also think, even myself, washing your clothes these days is a bit of a gamble. You actually don't know sometimes, even if you spent a lot of money on an item, how many times you can wash it before it starts to kind of show signs of wear. I know I'm really specific now about brands I buy from. So
in what sense is that things shrink, or they change shape, or that the material starts wearing away? What is it?
A number of things that you see in this Journal Investigates test, which is things like the dye coming out of a pair of jeans. That happened to me with a very well-known brand that cost me a fair penny for them. And, you know, for example, the Journal Investigates basically washed a load of baskets of clothing five times to do this kind of wash test, because that's what companies like Penny's do. They do wash test their clothes to see how many washes they'll get out of them before things like the dye starts coming out, or like threads come loose, or maybe they shrink. Like, there's a little bit of shrinkage you're going to find in almost any item, well, particularly cotton items. And so as a consumer, I'm always aware of these things, and I'm always feel like it's a bit of a guessing game with items. But what the Journal did was they put these to the test. They washed a pair, for example, of €18 men's jeans. Personally, if I was buying a pair of jeans for €18, I'd be asking questions, because I think that's quite a low price. But Penny's does obviously.
Sir, was our questions as to where is it coming from? How can it be afforded?
So
how can they make a profit on something that's flown or shipped from the other side of the world and then sell it for just €18?
Yeah, and I'm not saying that I'm asking those questions because the answers are always bad. The answer is sometimes very practical. Like, Penny's produces things at volume. You know, it produces loads and loads of pairs of jeans. That's why it's much cheaper for you to buy them in Penny's than somewhere that produces them by hand. For example, there's a company in Dublin called Native Denim that makes them for you. That's going to be way more expensive than buying a pair that Penny's have made. In this case as well, there's things like there's no metal rivets, and there's cotton inside the pockets to make kind of these design elements that Primark thinks will help the jeans be more recyclable. So when they come to the end of their life, they can be recycled. When these are washed five times, the Journal Investigates found out that they completely changed colour, with the original brown tinged stone wash fading to white. There was also a €16 cardigan, which was made from a fully synthetic polyester acrylic polyamide mix, and which is pretty typical, not just of Primark, but any high street store. Do check your labels before you go buy something that looks like wool, because 9 times out of 10, it will not be anything near wool. It'll be plastic turned
okay,
into.
Okay, Paddy, what leapt out at you in this?
What leapt out at me is the fundamental conundrum that consumers have, whereas, like, I suppose this is it. I mean, it's like Penny's and all sorts of other companies, in fairness, they do sort of front load an awful lot of sort of language that'll make people feel good about themselves. So, you know, sustainable here, you know, sort of green here. But it does sort of belie the fact that there is, you know, this is disconcertingly inexpensive. And so it's always about, that's what sort of really leapt out at me here. There was a quote from one of the experts that I quoted here, was Gwen Cunningham, that was kind of saying about that there's a real sort of balance that you have to make in terms of sort of what you do. So for example, blended fabrics, or sort of clothes with blended fabrics, are you know, a lot of the time they're more durable, you know, sort of they keep, maybe sort of they don't shrink in the wash, all that sort of stuff. However, they're basically useless as regards recycling and things like that. So it just goes to show that there is no magic lever that we can all pull here. Now, that doesn't necessarily mean that if we put words like green and sustainable things, then everyone can feel better about themselves. But it does, I think, really fundamentally underline just how big a minefield it is.
Yeah, but how many people buy clothes, particularly cheaper clothes, on the basis that they're not going to last, that they're only purchased to be worn on relatively few occasions? They don't care how they wash because they're bought to look well for a number of days, a number of nights out, and then they're gotten rid of and replaced with something else.
And there's the other thing as well, because I suppose we've all probably gone in, you know, and it's like, you know, maybe you just need like, you know, a stopgap t-shirt or two or something like that, or maybe it's kind of it's smalls or something like that, or some sort of stopgap. And, you know, like even if you needed to go in and buy like a, you know, a pair of sort of smart black trousers or something, like if you had some, you know, an event or something and nothing else worked, then there is, that is essentially what Penny's does in a lot of the time. And so that's as much a behavioral issue, I think, as well, is that, and that's something that we really need to bring in the round when we talk about all this.
Yeah, because I think we live in an era where so many things are created, not just clothing, but other items, tech items, for obsolescence. So it's like you can only have them for a certain amount of time, and then they'll be useless to you. And unfortunately, with clothes, there is an attitude of, once I have it for that one event that I need it for, it doesn't really matter what happens. And that is so prevalent among a lot of people. You see it a lot on social media. And there is a sense that if, you know, if somebody sees me wearing this outfit at a wedding too many times, then they're going to think I, you know, don't have money to buy clothes, or don't have any fashion sense. And we really, as consumers, are caught in a trap, like Paddy's saying there, because when we go to buy clothes, we're buying things that are going to, you know, kind of deteriorate pretty quickly in a lot of cases, unless you spend a lot of money. That makes very expensive. You know, and then the companies are creating stuff that isn't always a good quality too.
Okay, let's move on, and we'll talk about the US Transport Secretary Sean Duffy and his plan to bring civility back to air travel. Yes. Your namesake, Paddy. Have you ever, you know, you'd have to fly a bit back and forwards across the Irish Sea.
Indeed.
Have you ever flown while wearing your pyjamas? Would you kick your shoes off on board to give your feet room to breathe?
No, I would never do those things.
I wouldn't admit to it.
I know. Well, you know what? I dare say. I mean, it's, you know, I've worked in America a lot over the years, but I suppose a lot of my flights nowadays, I probably wouldn't have a huge amount of time to get your shoes off, even if I was so inclined.
Okay, but in America.
But in America, well, you know, I mean, I suppose it's a similar thing that you hear, like people talking about, like people going around the supermarkets in pajamas as well. Like, I mean, this is just like a phenomenon. People sort of do it. Certainly, I would tend towards wearing something that's more comfortable than formal. Now, what's interesting about what Cousin Sean here is,
we've got the actual audio of the video for the campaign. So let's just hear this.
Come fly with me, let's fly away.
Air travel is a miracle of American ingenuity. We built airports to launch a golden age of travel across the skies. We respected the dignity of air travel and the men and women who made the dream possible. Flying was a bastion of civility. But today, but manners don't stop at the gate.
That's right. Manners don't stop at the gate. Things aren't what they used to be. Some would call it the golden age of travel. Let's bring civility and manners back. Ask yourself, are you helping a pregnant woman put her bag in the overhead bin? Are you dressing with respect? Are you keeping control of your children? Are you saying thank you to your flight attendants and your pilots? Are you saying please and thank you in general? The golden age of travel begins with you.
Okay, for Barry. I can just imagine it on a Ryanair flight, huh?
Good luck with that one.
Silver service.
Oh, yeah, I'm sure they'll be bringing that in next year and charging us €1 million each for it. Yeah, it's like a Mad Men ad. You know, it's really harking back to that mid-century American values of, you know, are you helping a pregnant woman put her, you know, is she even allowed to fly? It's all of these kind of retrograde things. I mean, there is do correct things behind it in the sense of, like, we are clearly seeing an increase in maybe, you know, questionable behaviour. You're seeing a lot more videos shared of people behaving very badly.
Particularly heading off to sort of down to Spain and Portugal on holidays and things like that.
Had a few drinks on the way. But I do think that, like, it's one of the most stressful things in your life is to go take a flight. Like, I'm sorry, but, like, you are sweating by the time you get to the gate. The you know, planes are really cramped. You know you're spending not that much money, so you'll kind of take it. But it does kind of drive people, I think, a bit around the bend. And it isn't because they're not wearing suits and ties and dresses and heels as they tramp their way for an hour from one gate to the next or whatever. It's to do with the kind of behavioural situation of just being in an airport and flying, you know?
And I think the key thing about this is that, I mean, like, Sean Duffy is not a man who is trying to use auditioning to be Don Draper. Like, he is the United States Secretary of Transportation.
He controls things.
He's doing, like, this is Thanksgiving. Yeah. Like, this is the Thanksgiving weekend. This is the busiest week of, you know, we've all seen Planes, Trains and Automobiles. Mm-hmm. This is the busiest weekend in American travel. Also, I hasten to add, just a couple of months ago, he was in a huge problem with the amount of problems that in air traffic control, which is very much
the idea that he's talking about. Maybe he's right. Maybe we do need to be more respectful of each other on flights. Maybe we do need to have better standards of behavior.
Sure, but I mean, and that's, you know, he's not wrong, but I mean, you know, but to govern is to choose. And I mean, you know, when you have when you have air traffic control people who are taking trauma leave because there's simply too much for them to do, like, that is the priority one here. It's like, you know, Sean coming on and saying, it's like, oh, let's be, you know, let's put the tie on before you get into your aisle seat, it just doesn't really strike me as desperately sort of politically savvy, or at least there's a certain kind of fiddling while Rome burns kind of aspect.
Yeah, if it is, a listener here has a statement which sort of, I'm wondering, I says, wokeness has lowered the standards of human behaviour when it comes to certain people. But I would have thought maybe it's Sean Duffy who's been woke.
Tell them to text him and say, what does it even mean?
Yeah, but if you, the way woke has become a sort of a thing, surely
being nice to people
But Sean Duffy is demanding that people are nice and respectful to each other, so that would suggest that Donald Trump's transport secretary is woke.
Well, maybe he is, but he's, you know, is he ignoring a lot of all the stuff that he should be doing, you know, that Paddy was pointing out there? I think we don't need to get caught up in an argument about wokeness. And I do wonder how many domestic flights on a kind of a normal plane that Sean Duffy is taking, because, you know, and on a private plane mostly.
Well, and in fact, there was a whole sort of kerfuffle there a couple of months ago where he was he'd suggested that his wife take a plane not from Newark, which ironically enough is where he made this statement from, because basically Newark was too dangerous and too place to go. I tell you what, this whole story does indicate how, to the extent that there is a sort of a master plan behind sort of Trumpism, it's at how, like, sometimes if you just take a little thing that is like a trivial incident, but you know what, but gets sort of people riled up and gets people on radio shows talking about it, and then that's the big toe in the door to talk about other stuff, which they very much do.
Well, let's talk about another thing. Should Dublin Airport be renamed after a person? I mean, we know we have, for example, JFK in New York, Charles de Gaulle Airport in Paris. There must be loads of other examples around the world. Should we rename Dublin Airport after a former prominent politician, do you reckon, Aoife? Sean Lamass has been suggested, a former Taoiseach.
Yeah, Deputy Malcolm Byrne even is proposing the airport should be named as Sean Lamass Dublin International Airport. I don't know. I mean, I don't know how I feel about us calling places after people constantly. Like, do we need it? And at the same time, I feel like sometimes when that does happen, it's mostly men that we name them after. So why not make a bigger statement to name it after a woman? That's always what I'm going to say on this topic. Mm. He had some very good reasons for naming it after Sean Lamass. You know, people know his impact on the country and kind of modernity when it comes to Ireland. But, like, I mean, I don't know. Is anybody calling for it to happen? Besides Malcolm Byrne, obviously, are there other people calling for it?
It's a funny one. I would store this one under sure, I guess.
Yeah, you know, sure, I guess.
It's fine. I mean, it's a perfectly Germanian. I mean, my first instinct was that I did have to laugh. Because sort of when Dr. Fitzgerald died, when Gareth Fitzgerald died, there was suggestions that maybe because he worked for Aer Lingus that they might name the airport after him. So now that, you know, yet again, a Fianna Fáil man has got in ahead of the Fine Gael leader. you know, what is interesting, it was my first thought as well, is that, like, would it have to be Sean Lamass, and would it have to be a fella from 60 years ago?
Yeah.
Now, my first thought about it was Mary Robinson. But then again, given the fact that, you know, how damaging flights are to the environment, I'm not entirely sure she would appreciate the notion to to be honest.
Yeah, very good. Very true. Not very climate friendly. I mean, maybe if they do want to rename it, they should put it out to the public. At the same time, they might end up with Dublin Mac Airport Face or something like that boat. You know,
well, actually, the listener has just reminded me that we actually have George Best Airport in Belfast.
Indeed.
I thought of that. Okay, we need to take a break. We'll be back with more of Paddy Duffy and Aoife Barry in the wee trending after this.
Hey, football fans, Drew Brees here. Kroger Play and Owner's Box have teamed up for the next generation of daily fantasy sports. First-time players can get $25 in free entries plus 250 fuel points. And you can score all season long with 2x the fuel points for every dollar spent to use at Kroger Fuel Centers. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER.
Void where prohibited. Eligibility restrictions apply. 18 plus in most eligible states, but age varies by jurisdiction. Offer is valid between 8/6/25 and 1/5/26. Terms apply. See full terms and conditions at ownersbox.com/footballfuelpointstc.
I'm caught up in the game. My attention is on every play and every whistle. But what I'm missing is a signal coming from my kidneys. That signal isn't like a ref's whistle. It's more of a silent SOS, which could be warning me of an increased risk for events like heart attack or stroke. And a way I can catch that signal? A simple urine test called UACR. If you have type 2 diabetes or high blood pressure, talk to your doctor about the UACR test. Detect the SOS. Visit detectthesos.com to learn more.
The Last Word
with Matt Cooper
on Today FM.
Okay, Aoife Barry and Paddy Duffy are with us for the wee trending. Paddy, I think most people always thought adolescence, that period of life, ends in your mid to late teens, maybe late teens, but apparently it's way later than that, says who?
It really is, yes. There was, Professor Duncan Astell, who's a researcher in neuroinformatics, which is, you know, pretty heavy duty stuff there at Cambridge University. Now, they have been they've been looking at this, and they reckon that there are, they found sort of four pivotal turning points in brain organization. So there's basically five epochs that we all live through. So between birth and the age of 9 is one of them. And then essentially between adolescence is between 9 and 32. So if you have a partner or a child in their 20s and wonder when they're going to grow up, it's a bit more natural than that. Between 32 and 66 is your kind of essentially your adult years. Rather pleasingly then, they say that between 66 and 83 is your early aging years, which is, it comes as something of a boon. It's like, as any of us living to 2100, it sounds quite interesting. And then from 83 onwards is what they call late aging.
Well, what's this based on?
So they basically looked at using 12 different measures. So this isn't, we might be thinking about like behavioral, like saying, oh, are people acting like adolescents or whatever, but actually they're looking at things like the efficiency of the wiring of the brain, how compartmentalized it is, whether the brain relies heavily on central hubs. I mean, again, I'm not a scientist, so this might not be making that much sense, or has a more diffuse connectivity network. So basically our brains are defined by something called network consolidation, because we have these synapses in our brain and they're basically whittled down, and the more active synapses survive as we kind of learn, because obviously we come out of the womb needing to learn loads of things and our brain needs to learn too. So it seems also that like as we age, those synapses might be kind of unraveling slightly. So we're getting to 83, and that late aging is affecting things in a reverse way, I guess you could say, to when you're younger. So it is good news, and I think it, in the sense of like good news for those of us who want to live longer, but I think it's interesting news that we really don't know that much about the brain, and your average person really doesn't know that much about it, and we can sometimes be defined by what society tells us we should be doing or thinking at certain ages, and maybe realizing that our brain is aging and developing in a different way can help us realize in your 60s and 70s you don't have to be perhaps what previous generations were.
I'm more interested actually it happens in the sort of the 20s, in the sense that that would suggest, you know, if adolescents maybe sort of wilder, impulsive decisions and the rest of it that we attribute to teenagers are actually being made by people in their 20s, and then would also raise questions about the impact, if the brain is still developing at that stage, of things like drinking drugs on them.
Well, and this is it, and this is one of the things that they say here as well, is that it would give insight into all sorts of sort of risk factors for mental health disorders and all sorts of things like that. So it's I think it was not long ago that they were saying, it's like, oh, the brain isn't fully formed until 25. That was kind of the thing that was going around, and oftentimes that was the basis of an awful lot of bad decisions. Well, it's like, well, you know, I'm making bad choices, I'm just in my bad choices era, you know.
Yeah.
So it certainly does. I mean, I think it's one of those things where and it's always useful, I think, to sort of think about sort of brain work, or just even sort of how we interact with each other, is that the way that we interacted with each other in the past wasn't necessarily a code of good practice, and that we're always finding out different ways to, you know, to be better to each other, really.
Mm-hmm.
And this is kind of really what was sort of the take home from me on this.
Okay, and then let's keep it with younger people, teenagers and access to weight loss drugs. I thought weight loss drugs are supposed to be prescribed by doctors, but it now seems that there is a sizable black market has developed in people managing to access weight loss drugs, but giving them to teenagers?
Yeah, this is a really eye-opening article. I think anybody who's been keeping an eye on the rise of the use of GLP-1 drugs, like Ozempic and Mounjaro, which originally were used for people, for example, who have diabetes, to control insulin levels and things like that, now they're being used to control people's weight as well. And, you know, there was a 617% increase in seizures of unauthorised weight loss drugs entering Ireland in the first 6 months of the year, compared to 2024, according to the Health Products Regulatory Authority. You know, if you search things like Mounjaro buy in Ireland on social media platforms, according to this article, you will find a lot of people with profiles claiming to sell it. That's been covered in, I think, RTE documentaries on BBC.
But what
as well.
Are you buying? How do you know what you're actually
you literally
buying?
Do not know. Well, and that is the thing. People are buying black market versions of these drugs where they are being told that they are GLP-1s or they will help them lose weight, etc. It is terrifying. And I think, you know, the fact that people are willing to do that does indicate that there are people who are very desperate for the results that these drugs promise to give them.
Yeah.
And there's probably questions as to why people are so desperate. There's got to be one piece of it, which is around social media pressure, which is around pressure on women in particular, the celebrity angle, the idea that, you know, body image pressures are very, very heightened. Then maybe there's a health aspect. Maybe people are like, I've tried everything. I can't, for whatever reason, access a doctor. Should you be going for black market medicines? No, but that potentially is some people's reason. The fact that this is happening also, I'm wondering, where is the crackdown happening on the sense of the people selling them, and where are these people getting those off-market drugs, and how much is this going to keep going? Because it's a lot cheaper to buy these fake drugs as well.
Yeah, and going up north online, to get them over the border quite a lot of the time.
Like, we've just been talking about how, you know, the brain is maybe more complex and is forming, you know, for longer, for later than we realise. Another really key important thing to do about this is that we don't really know the effects on, like, there was no studies that were ever done on people as young as who are now procuring it on WhatsApp and Telegram. Mm-hmm. So we haven't really done a whole lap of the course on this at all. So we don't, like, even though we know that there are certain side effects to the likes of Ozempic or what have you, we don't definitively, even though we know those and some of them are horrible, and they get brushed over in the idea, like, you know, oh, somebody looks suddenly fantastic and, well, let's go for it. Even those are brushed over, but we legitimately do not know. Never mind sort of what, you know, if you're getting it on WhatsApp and then it's like, well, what is it? We literally don't know, even if it was good stuff, we don't know necessarily what it would do to a young body. And that's just as pernicious as anything, I think.
Yeah, it's just a generation by generation, there's more and more pressures on young people around body image, which can lead to eating disorders among people, you know, and it's kind of shocking to see that people will so readily take advantage of other people and sell them things like this on the black market, knowing that they could potentially damage their, you know, body and mind in some way.
Tell us about the nuns, Paddy, who would not be restricted to a nursing home.
This is, I would say, far and away one of my favourite stories, possibly ever.
Steady on, no, Paddy.
Well, it's a beautiful end, finally. So first of all, there's three, in the news report here, it tells of the tumultuous story of runaway sisters, Rita, 82, Regina, 83, and Bernadette, 88. Now, this sounds to me like a film with Judi Dench, Imelda Staunton, and Celia Emery written all over it. But basically, they've been in a convent now in Austria for some time. But it was considered that sort of they were ailing and they needed treatment elsewhere. They had other opinions and then decided to break back in to their own convent.
So they had to get out of the nursing home in the first place, their care home.
So they broke it. Yeah. So they broke out of their care home. And yes, and then they broke back into, and how's this for a name? The abandoned convent at Goldenstein Castle, which is with the help of supporters, which makes me think it's some sort of like really ornate Great Escape thing. I mean, I think the sooner this film script is greenlit, to be honest, the better.
And they're on their own.
Hasn't it been made
media?
Already as Nuns on the Run?
They're on TikTok, I think they're on social media sharing videos, and part of the rules to do with them being allowed to stay there is that they're not allowed to stay on social media, which I actually feel like is the worst punishment, because being on social media connects them with the outside world, and it's how they raised awareness. And it's this almost this idea that, like, you're not going to be able to tell anybody now what's going on for you. I just think that sounds particularly cruel, and I just think fair play to them. Yeah. They did not want to be in this new place. They were moved out because there was nobody else living there. Now they're back.
And do you know what else? I think it's really nice with stuff like this, where it's like when octogenarian Austrian nuns can connect with, you know, the young people on TikTok.
Yeah.
It just goes to show, I think it's like sometimes we're all too willing to kind of put ourselves into silos based on age or status or whatever. But it's actually, you know what, it's like if you have two people that are genuine and then, you know, they can, or two types of people, then they can really connect in the most fantastic ways, like with this.
We're getting lots of airport name suggestions. Quite a few people. Cork, people want Roy Keane Airport for Cork, mm-hmm. or Micheál Martin Airport,
right.
or Michael Collins Airport for another big Cork name. Join Jimmy Barry Murphy Airport is another suggestion. A lot of people saying Liverpool already has John Lennon Airport. I wonder how much of a fuss did that cause with Paul McCartney fans and the relatives of John.
Okay. Nate O'Connor, any women's names?
I think definitely joking, saying Charlie Haughey Airport. another one going for Paul McGrath, as we've said earlier. The few that have been going around this week, Troy Parrott. Let's see how well he goes for the rest of his career. Here's one that I like, though. Brian Baruch Airport.
Interesting. Yeah,
we're connecting with that era of Irish, you know, history and mythology.
And I tell you what, one thing that it is that it isn't. It's good, I suppose, as if we're absolutely having to name something after somebody, then it doesn't fall into the usual kind of, it's either a politician or a pop star or a sports person.
Wait, because there's some people all saying Phil Lynott Airport, Phil Lynott Airport. Yeah. Another one, though, I don't think this will go down well, Bono Airport.
It's going to be controversial. Sinead O'Connor Airport, I think. That's
all right, we're going to have to leave it there. Thank you very much, Aoife Barry and Paddy Duffy, for being with us.
The Last Word
with Life Pharmacy. Over 100 local pharmacies nationwide that are always here to help. Life Pharmacy. Live better together.
I'm caught up in the game. My attention is on every play and every whistle. But what I'm missing is a signal coming from my kidneys. That signal isn't like a ref's whistle. It's more of a silent SOS, which could be warning me of an increased risk for events like heart attack or stroke. And a way I can catch that signal? A simple urine test called UACR. If you have type 2 diabetes or high blood pressure, talk to your doctor about the UACR test. Detect the SOS. Visit detecttheSOS.com to learn more.